This is the On the Pony Express podcast,
part of the On3 Network.
Check out all the SMU coverage you need at ontheponyexpress.com. Now, here's your host, Billy Embody.
Billy Embody.
1, 2, 3, here we go.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the On the Pony Express podcast. I'm Billy Embody. Thanks for joining us. Before we get into the podcast with Hayden Howerton breaking down SMU's 48-25 win over Pitt, I want to tell you guys thank you. 1,000 subscribers now at ontheponyexpress.com. We have hit that century mark, a huge moment for the site. I want to thank all of you who have joined us. If you haven't joined us yet, you can jump on board the site. You can go and do it right this second, in seconds, because that is how easy it is to subscribe to the site. You can jump on board. You can get 50% off your annual subscription today. And it just takes moments to get access to the entire crew at ontheponyexpress.com. Again, 50% off annual subscriptions. It's really, really simple to jump on board there. And you get the first week for $1, too. So it truly is the best way to do it. Go to ontheponyexpress.com, click the join button in the top right, and we will get you all hooked up with all the scoop on SMU. Dropped a huge recruiting piece on Tuesday morning, and SMU just landed another commitment. College football playoff rankings out. Tons of great conversation on the message board right now. So join us at ontheponyexpress.com for a ton of fun. And before we get to that, man, Hayden Howerton, we do have to tell you guys that we are presented by our friends at StatusJet. StatusJet.com. David Henry and his team are busy planning a lot of great trips for Mustang fans across the country. Basketball season is upon us. There's some really quality trips to get going with. You can go out to see SMU North Carolina and Chapel Hill in January. You can also get that SMU Charlottesville, SMU Virginia trip planned to Charlottesville to see the Mustangs take on Virginia later this month in a huge game for SMU. Reach out to them and mention code PONYUPACC for a discount on a round-trip flight, or just mention on theponyexpress.com. They'll take care of you and have been taking care of Mustang fans all over the country all season long. All right, Hayden, this is that game that we talked about being obviously so pivotal for many reasons. But for SMU, they now enter the bye week with an unblemished record in ACC play. They're the number 13th ranked team in the college football playoff, which was just announced before we got going here. That Pitt game, though, we've got to talk about just how dominant of a performance it was by SMU. And on homecoming weekend, the entire, really just Ford Stadium, campus, everything was electric all weekend long.
It was so much fun, man. It's always great to get old teammates and friends back on the hilltop, regardless of when you went to school. And the 83 Cotton Bowl champs were honored. You know, I personally saw a lot of former teammates. And look, I had talked about last week how it was going to be really hard to predict this game because I thought these teams matched up so similarly. But, you know, this was the biggest game in Ford history. You know, I thought it was certainly. And SMU made an 8-0 Pitt Panthers. I mean, we dominated them almost to the effect of Houston Christian earlier this year. That was a terrible showing by Pitt in a team that still is playing for something where they're only, you know, tied for third now in the ACC. But lame showing by them on the field, lame showing by their fans who claimed they were going to take over our stadium. And, I mean, they barely took over one section. But the Ponies were off to the races as soon as the national anthem was over. We lost the coin toss, but we got the ball, drove right down the field, and scored an easy walk-in two-yard touchdown by LJ Johnson. And, you know, Pitt just never really responded.
Yeah, I think Pitt was, for some reason, caught off guard by how ready SMU was to play. And look, first two plays, or the first play for SMU wasn't necessarily great. Then Kevin Jennings throws one up, basically, to Keyshawn Smith, who comes down with an unreal catch. And I think all of a sudden, And not that SMU was going to lose that game or do anything differently overall. I think that it was clearly their night. But as soon as that play happened, any other tension that was out there was gone from this team. And that's why they were able to completely roll. It's just that one play kind of like clearing all the rest of the bad that happened from Duke. And, you know, Kevin talked about it in the postgame show. He said, Kevin Jennings was saying how I just needed to get back to practice. I leaned on my family. And that's so cool to hear that. And another reason why, you know, if you're a kid in Dallas or if you're a kid locally, probably for any college, especially in the Power Four level, staying home is a cool thing. I mean, you can go talk to your family, go talk to your close mentors and get over something like that and just get back to playing ball. And that's what SMU did from the get-go.
Yeah, it was important for Kevin to get back on the horse, and I definitely thought he did an awesome job. But this game, SMU wanted this one more. There was a lot more effort on our sideline than the team that wore white on Saturday. I mean, my keys to the game, the very first one, we talked about ball security all last week, you know, until we were blue in the face. And so what I said was we had to win the turnover battle and control the clock, and we won the turnover battle 2-0. You know, on top of that, we outrushed Pitt 161-103. You pair those two things up, and it doesn't matter that we really lost the time of possession battle by a few minutes because of what happened in the other two phases. You know, I also talked secondly about had to win in the red zone. You know, SMU got stopped on the goal line against Duke, and that was a pivotal moment in the game. SMU scored 31 points on 5 red zone trips. I mean, that was a highly successful night for the offense in the red zone. And then lastly, KJ just needed to get going again. He needed to get out there, get some confidence back under his belt so that we knew he would be able to play great in the game. And he had 100 yards passing at the end of the first quarter. I mean, I don't think you can ask for a better start from KJ and what he did. And to be honest, that first play that we're talking about where the ball gets tipped at the line of scrimmage and it looks like it's going to get picked deep in our own territory, I think everybody kind of took a deep breath of, uh-oh, you know, here we go. But he never looked twice. You know, he bounced back and he was able to get going early and was a huge, huge factor in why we put up so much points on offense.
And you know, SMU was so explosive, and that's also a piece to time of possession. And Rhett Lashley's not going to apologize for that. And you know that well. When you get those plays like the 80-yarder to Matthew Hibner, you get 70-something yarder from Rashard Smith, you get some of those explosives, all of a sudden, you can really change the way your time of possession is trending. It's almost like on the flip side of it, if you get one 50-yard run from a player and you haven't run the ball well all night, well, it's going to make it look a little bit better. But when you get those type of explosive plays, it's going to make your time of possession, you know, go down when you have a one or two play drive. And again, that's something they're not going to apologize for. And it just spoke to the overall dominance of it. But I'm with you. Time of possession is so critical. And when SMU is running the ball and doing whatever they want offensively, which they did against Pitt, in my opinion, for the most part. And think about this. They took the starters out, you know, what, mid fourth quarter by that time, everybody was out, maybe a little bit earlier. That's where, I mean, it could have been poured on a little bit more. And Rhett Lashley wanted to keep everybody obviously healthy, get into the bye week, get gone. And so sometimes those little stats just don't necessarily add up, but everybody who was in Ford knows that if SMU really wanted to, they could have had that time of possession all day.
We had 6 punts on the night. And when I saw that, I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize there were that many. Well, 4 of them were in the last 19 minutes of the ball game. So that kind of just shows that SMU, if we'd have wanted to, we could have put up 60 on Pitt, realistically. I mean, offense, we talked about it a little bit, rushed for 161 against the 9th best rushing defense in the country. I mean, yes, I know a lot of that was a 71-yard rushing touchdown by Breshard Smith, and that was a hell of a run, but KJ had over 300 through the air for the second time this year. And again, he was relieved by Preston and then Keldrick in the fourth quarter, where if we'd have kept rolling, he could have possibly eclipsed that 400 mark that he's still looking to do for the first time in his career. You know, Breshard had 161 yards rushing by himself. So he had 183 total on the night if you count his receptions as well. There were a few negative runs by some of the other players that, you know, kind of brought the total down to where it's the same as Breshard's by himself. You know, obviously the 71-yard touchdown, that was an influence trap play, and it was blocked up beautifully. I haven't seen that yet this year from us. I think that's the first time we've run that play, and it was awesome to watch. Matthew Hebner, he had 108 on the night in his 80-yard pop pass touchdown. That's my favorite passing play. I talked about it, I think, on the Bouchel pod, where we've run that to Kylan Granson before. And it wouldn't surprise me if they installed that with that clip against Texas State, where Kylan went off for that big one. Keyshawn Smith, he had 89 yards receiving, had some outstanding grabs. And you know what? He just kept playing. You know, one, he didn't go down. All the Pitt players stop and look around, and he goes for another 30, you know? So I talk a little bit just about all the effort Saturday night, and we just wanted it. PJ, on the backside of Brashard's big run, I mean, he had to sift through a defensive end to a backside linebacker, and you know what? He got on his horse, and he was able to get just enough where he threw the angle off, and the backside linebacker wasn't able to take a good enough angle to get him, and Brashard just had enough in the tank to outrun him.
Yeah, I loved the Brashard-Smith run because I thought it was so perfectly set up, but then I also feel like that Hebner play, you nailed it with the Granson comparison there, and I know you mentioned it in the past, but for SMU to continue to add things into the toolbox for this offense and continue to give opposing defensive coordinators and coaches that kind of a, you know, just almost a carrot, like, okay, you got to keep digging in the film room to find something else. I think that's one of the underrated pieces of Rhett Lashley, and people can say what they want here and there about what, you know, how SMU's offense has been, you know, at various, you know, points of the season or in games and things like that. But when you look at how many layers there are to this offense, it's so impressive. And I felt like in the big stages, SMU's really been able to show why they are such a dangerous team because of different little things like that, where the casual might not notice it, but, you know, ball knowers or people who watch SMU a lot know, man, didn't see that play, but it's just another wrinkle that keeps getting added in.
That's what's fun playing for Red. He's going to pull stuff out from, you know, the 2013 Auburn National Championship run. You know, he had installed things I remember from those years. So, you know, he digs deep in the archives. He's proud of what he's done in the past, and he's not afraid to pull old stuff out like that. But something I read was Matthew Hebner, he ran a 4.82 coming out of high school, and you got to give hats off to the Michigan strength staff. He outran every single DB that Pitt had on Saturday night. So he was obviously moving, even though as a big guy, it's not always looking that way. But I was so happy he didn't get hawked, that he was able to get that big touchdown. But speaking of the big boys, I got to give some credit to this offensive line. They gave up zero pressures from the first group. I mean, unreal. There was two sacks on the stat sheet, and the further I dug on that one is Keldrick Luster. He took one. Obviously, the ones weren't in at that point. And then the other one that's credited to Kevin, I believe, is labeled as either quarterback fault or quarterback run that just got marked as a sack on the stat sheet. So zero pressures is incredible from this offensive line group. I don't care who you're playing. We didn't do that against Houston Christian. So to be able to do that against a top 20 team in the country is very impressive.
Yeah, I completely agree. I thought the offensive line really stepped up, and they, I felt like, looked really mobile. And they're a group that, you know, SMU, you know, had Logan Parr break the rock. And that speaks to how much I think respect is going around in the building for what they're doing. And you know, Logan's beat up, you know, J.O. is beat up. Everybody's beat up this time of year, but that offensive line has really battled through, and they really found themselves dominating a Pitt defense that, you know, you're watching College Game Day on Saturday morning, and they're talking up the Sharks and Pat McAfee's, you know, talking about how they might feast or whatever, which they have been playing well. They just came off a good game against Kyle McCord, but SMU made them look slow overall, and their offensive line got to the second level and was really able to control that group start to finish.
Yeah, I boycotted that ESPN show, so I didn't get a chance to catch that episode. I was watching our friends Eric McElhane.
So I went out to the huddle and watch that, but then I saw Saban call Kevin Jennings the most underrated player in the country, and then Kevin goes out and balls that way. And so I had to go back and find it because, you know, one, we need people to come to our website, but two, I want that article, you know, for Kevin out there, that you know, it's not just a clip, which is cool, but what a moment that was. And then for Kevin to go out and prove him right, pretty cool. Not saying they're not off the, you know, the list, you know, like the who's the Billy Madison guy. He might be still there on the list for not picking SMU. Maybe by the year's end, so they'll all be saying glad they called that guy. Maybe they'll have us on to make it feel a little bit better or something. But that's why I watched. I did not watch it in real time. I was out at the huddle and came back and was like, wow, they really, really threw SMU a bone. And then Kirk Herbstreit raved about the atmosphere too. So, yeah. I mean, college football playoff ranking, things are really getting weird on the Hilltop right now.
Hey, four out of the six of those guys picked us to win, so I can't be too mad at them for that. Yep. But defensively, I mean, we gave up 3 points at half to the sixth best scoring offense in the country. I mean, Eli Holstein, he looked pretty good. He struggled the last couple games, but he looked rough on Saturday. I mean, he took an Isaiah Smith sack on the very first third down, and frankly, I think it rattled him. You know, you had to remember that. You know, these guys were missing some pieces up front to where he's probably looking over his shoulder a little bit, concerned about the protection, especially after taking one on the very first third down. I mean, I've been a part of a group that's given up sacks on the first third down. And just for the whole game, you're just every time it's third down, you're just like, here we go, man. You know, it's going to be one of these. But on the night, he had 248 yards, no touchdowns, one pick, took 3 sacks overall. They scored 14 of their 25 points in the last 5 minutes of the game. I mean, the real final score is 48-11. So defense had 2 big-time takeaways. They had the Jonathan McGill pick in the end zone, and they also forced a fumble. And look, this defense also responded the same way that Kevin did. Yes, they played well as far as not giving up yardage last week, but it wasn't the same club takeaway in Durham that we had been so used to. And so they were able to get those two. They were able to get back on track, and Jared Harrison Hunt, Jafari, Isaiah Smith, those were the three people who had sacks. But we had 9 tackles for loss from this defense on the night. I mean, the one that comes to mind is the big third and short stop in the first half when they're going in towards the Weber end zone. And, I mean, this defense just swarmed to the football, and the crowd erupted. I mean, it was a really awesome third down for these guys. But both Ahmads, Ahmad Moses, Ahmad Walker, Kobe Wilson, all had double-digit tackles on the night. And then Alex Kilgore, he had 9 and a PBU. Isaiah Nwokwobia, he had 7 and 3 PBUs. I mean, this defense, you look all over the field, I mean, guys are just putting up numbers. You know, Elijah Roberts, he now has 44 pressures on the season. He added 2 more on Saturday night. This was just a complete all-around game from the defense.
It really was. And they had so many moments where you're watching it and you're just like, they just continued to come wave after wave after wave. And I think that's where I feel like we talk about this a lot. They, over the course of a game, imposed their will on an opposing team's offense so well. And there are gaps in like the Duke game where Duke was able to, you know, come back and find a way and do all those things. And there are times at the Louisville game where they came back, they found a way to tie the game, things like that. But they have so much depth. They have so much motor in them as well. And that's where, especially against a team that, you know, like Pitt, slow. And that's where we'll look ahead. We'll look to BC. We'll look to the rest of the schedule as we do our podcast every week. But that's why, not to scare anybody, because BC's kind of been average, but that's where I still think BC is the toughest test on the schedule, is because you're going to end up having a guy that can run around a little bit and do some different things. And they've faced that, and they've gotten a little bit better with it and things like that. But you have so much depth that they are eventually going to wear you down and make you quit. And I kind of felt like Pitt quit, especially just kind of from the quarterback mindset, you know, and Eli's still developing, but they were able to just keep coming and getting after him. And they're a tough group. And they really, really showed the country how tough they are, you know, being just one of 2 games involving ranked teams playing against each other last week. Everybody was at least paying attention to this game, even though it's, you know, ACC Network, not ESPN or ABC. they were able to still get a lot of headlines. You know, Scott Van Pelt, I think, was talking about SMU after the game wrapped up. So it was a big opportunity for this defense to show people where they're at. And everybody's always going to talk about offense when Rhett Lashley's the head coach here. But, yeah, it's all a team game for SMU. I think that's what's important for people to know. But the defense can't get talked about enough these days.
Yeah, I mean, our depth, especially in the front seven, I'm looking at the depth chart right now. Alex Kilgore, I forget, he's not even a starter, and he's putting up these kind of numbers. I mean, he's sitting behind Ahmad Walker. I mean, dude's a stud for us. Yeah. You know, looking at other places, you know, you got Cam Robertson, you know, backing up Elijah. He's productive. You know, Isaiah Smith, obviously super productive. Corey Robertson is on the depth chart, technically the third guy. And I feel like he's come up huge in certain times this year. So just all around, it's awesome when you're able to plug and play so many different guys, and it helps keep guys fresh. It'll help us when we're in the 14th, hopefully, game of the season, and, you know, we need a big stop, and guys just have 2/3 of the snaps they otherwise would on their body.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. That's why, you know, we always talk about in the offseason and transfer portal, why NIL is such an important piece, why SMU's scouting department has to go out and not only find guys like a Jafari Harvey, a Jared Harrison Hunt, guys are very blatantly there that have played and started a lot of games at the Power Conference level, but you also got to go out and find guys like Tank Booker. Tank Booker was, I don't want to say an afterthought, but he wasn't even starting. Like, I don't know before this year if he started a game in college, maybe one, maybe two. Like, he is so important to this defense. You look at Mike Lockhart, who started multiple games over the course of his career. He's actually playing well right now, too. Doesn't get talked about enough. I mean, they just have guys just all over the place, and they all have so many different stories as far as how they got here or their careers or whatever, but they're all buying into playing really hard-nosed team defense, and I think it's just so cool to see it come together. At this level, too, we saw it come together against AAC competition, and we saw it, you know, on full display against Tulane, and SMU was able to almost not get by, but play really good defense, but not needing the depth because it wasn't a Power Conference schedule. But then they get to this, and then they add the depth, and it continues to amaze me at times how physically imposing they can be on an opposing offense.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking the other day, I was looking at snap counts for all these different guys, you know, on our team. I mean, PJ is 6 snaps away from breaking the 1,000 mark in his career for SMU. JO is in like the 3,400s, something like that, which he's played a lot of football. You know, he's closing in on my record. And, you know, I was curious. I mean, I have 4,012 was mine. And I'm only saying that because my body was beat up at the end of my college career. I wish I would have had a Ben Sparks, you know, and I did in Cam Irvin, and I've spoke about that before. He needs to get on the pod at some point. Was able to come in and rotate and spell and things like that, but that was so late in my career, you know, that it was like, well, you know, it is what it is. But again, these guys like Logan Parr, who are going to have two, he's gonna has another year after this one. He gets to rotate a little bit with Ben, and earlier in the season, he was rotating with Nate Anderson. So it's just going to pay off dividends in the long run, even for those younger guys like Nate Anderson who have more years of eligibility, and they'll have some big-time experience under their belt.
Yeah, they will. And they're getting a little bit of that experience, too, on the field goal unit, and SMU continues to be one of the best in the country. How about – Let me ask you this. You played a lot. I was around for a cup of coffee out there and spent some time around some good kickers and things like that. But have you ever seen a kicker with as much moxie as Colin Rogers is working with right now?
Absolutely love it. I would go to war for that guy if that was my kicker. I mean,
he's awesome. He's going to be our For the Brand guy in a few years. I'm telling 100%. You. Let's keep it rolling.
100%. But, man, I can't help but feeling like the announcer jinx on Ben Saul's Pitt's kicker. He was perfect on the year, and then he goes out and misses a 47-yarder. And not that a missed field goal kills you, but when your guy is perfect and you're banking on that, and then it was just that kind of night for Pitt where nothing could go right, especially on special teams. I mean, their punts were atrocious. Their average was 31 yards. Those are high school numbers. You know, Colin Rogers, on the other hand, he had 12 points on the night, 2 field goals, 6 extra points. Isaac Pearson, he had 44 yards per punt over his 6 punts. I mean, all three phases for SMU, offense, defense, special teams, completely manhandled Pitt.
Yeah, and I mean, for a Pitt team that, you know, has an electric return guy as well, Desmond Reed, he was able to he had a 40-yard punt return or 40 yards of punt return yardage on the night. Just kind of looking it up here, but nothing. I don't know why it's not pulling up the right way. There we go. Sorry, he had a long of 22. He had 4 returns for 40 yards on the night, so it wasn't ever going to be something that, you know, really changed the momentum. They did have a 35-yard kickoff return, but other than that, was pretty bottled up overall. And so where people are always going to look to your special teams is, can you contain game-changing plays by covering returns, and can you execute your operation kicking and punting the ball well? And SMU is doing that at a very high level right now, in my opinion. And it's hard to play special teams and do all of that in today's day and age where guys want to play more snaps on offense or defense, but they're finding a way to do it really well and against a top 25 team in Pitt. So, like you said, everybody dominated. It was like the most complete game SMU played, I felt like. And I have a ton of respect for what SMU's been able to do with that Louisville game. I still don't think it gets talked about enough, just what they did controlling that game start to finish, even though the final score wasn't 48-25. I just think Louisville's that much better than Pitt, in my opinion. But this was just a beatdown, a good old fashioned. What is it? Belt to ass? Is that what the kids say now?
Ass kicking is what I had written down. But yeah, that works too. But yeah, this team made such a huge statement before the first college football playoff rankings, and AP poll has us at 13. And then going into tonight, you know, I was a little bit like, well, you know, the playoff rankings always seem to have us 3 or 4 spots lower, and we come out, we're 13 again. We're first team out, but we'll get to that in a minute when we get to the coast to coast. I'm going to get to my MVP. I've been trying to give it back to this unit. It's been on the defensive side for, I think, 3 weeks in a row now. I got to give it to an offensive lineman this week, and really all 5 deserve it, and Garen Justice. But that's cheating. I've already done that so far this year, so I got to pick one. A lot of guys are playing through a lot of injuries, like we talked about. Logan Parr, thought he played a hell of a game on basically one arm, you know, and he smashed the rock. We talked about the zero pressures allowed by the starting group. J.O. had a nice fumble recovery. He's chasing the ball, dives on one for us, you know, kept that 0 turnovers for our offense. Ja'Kai Clark, I thought, played really well in the run game. I think Savion Byrd had his best game. He looked sharp. I didn't see any big-time mental errors that obviously affected us. He looked like he knew what he was doing, and I credit a little bit of that to Ja'Kai Clark because he's doing such a good job with communications, and then the guys playing next to him are obviously all echoing it around. But ultimately, I really liked P.J. Williams' performance. I have a lot of respect for P.J. and how much he's improved as he's gotten into midseason form. I was a little bit disappointed with the first couple games that he's played just because I knew the potential that this guy had after watching him all spring and hearing about the incredible training camp that this guy had. I mean, I thought he played really great in the run game, and then, you know, obviously 0 pressures in the pass game, no sacks, 6 snaps away from 1,000 for SMU. He's a really underrated piece of our offense. So congrats, P.J. Williams, my MVP of the week.
I think I'm going to go on the defensive side of the ball, and I'm going to go with maybe a guy that doesn't get talked about enough, but is just a flat-out ball player. And I was actually texting with one of our colleagues from Georgia who remembers this guy coming out of high school and how big of a winner he is coming out of Warner Robins. And Ahmad Walker, I'm giving it to him. 2.5 tackles for loss. 10 on the night, was able to nab 3 solo. And you had Ahmad Moses doing well, 10 tackles, 5 of which were solo. Kobe Wilson led the team with 11 tackles, but I just felt like Ahmad Walker's game was just completely he played with his head on fire, hair on fire, I think, that entire game. And I do want to try to recognize the defensive guys, you know, each week. I mean, you could go Breshard Smith, you can go Kevin Jennings, and they're playing really well, and they needed those guys, and they're very important. But I think Ahmad Walker really helped set the tone, and that whole group, you know, just kind of fed off of everybody. I think that's one thing that doesn't get harped on enough, is that they feed off of each other so well. And, you know, it just happened to be Ahmad Walker. This is the guy that I'm picking. I just loved his game Saturday night. So congrats to both of those guys. And as we get into Coast to Coast, we'll be dishing out some congratulations to SMU. But before we do that, got to remind you guys that we are presented by our friends at AKM Turf and Greens. Use code PONYUP or mention PONYUP or On the Pony Express for $500 off your backyard service. Get it going in time for the holidays. They've got a ton of people that are calling them up, getting their backyards redone. Had a couple more On the Pony Express subscribers reach out, and things are rocking and rolling. And we continue to show this backyard because it's so much fun. Imagine a little two tables set up there for Thanksgiving if it's nice and cool. Roll out a couple TVs or something. I don't know. You can go nuts. But reach out to AKM Turf and Greens today and get your backyard made over with all the turf. Make it a putting green. Make it a lot of fun. But Hayden, I tell you, the fun doesn't stop for SMU right now. It's a bye week. This is a perfect week for this kind of rat poison to be unveiled for the first time. Gives the coaching staff a little bit of time to get back on the field. I'm sure if I am able to make it out to practice tomorrow morning, that it might be one of those feelings where, okay, it's a little cooler out, it's bye week, we're 13th in the country. You know, I'm not saying they're not going to handle their business, but I have a feeling Rhett Lashley is going to be in one of those moods, just kind of like, you know, little press clippings, things like that. He'll be getting after them, trying to avoid some of that. But the good thing is they have this type of a time frame to move past this, because they do face a Boston College team next week, 2:30 p.m. Central in Ford on ESPN, that beat them last year in the bowl game.
I do believe that there are some premeditated bad practices, especially when you're, you know, flying high, feeling good. But I think 13th is probably the sweet spot for SMU as far as the rankings go. I think if we were inside the top 12, it would be a lot easier to let your foot off the gas and feel great about it. But us being just outside of it still kind of reminds us, hey, we still have work to do if we want to keep playing this season. And Coast to Coast this week, I think, is going to be more of a playoff reaction show, because that's kind of where we're at now. We're really, the only big things that happened this past weekend that affect us are, one, Louisville beating Clemson, to where now us and Miami are the only teams without a loss in the ACC. And, man, I guess A&M, South Carolina, where South Carolina beats A&M after they were feeling real good about themselves after defeating LSU the week before. But to kind of work our way from 15th to 1, you know, we have LSU, A&M, and SMU are the first three out. So you look at all three of those teams, A&M and LSU can make a serious push for the SEC championship game. And SMU keeps handling business, and we play well over the next three games. I mean, we'll be in Charlotte against Miami in a massive matchup. Yeah, there's the rankings for our YouTube viewers. Billy's got the full clip up there. But yeah, so 12th, we're looking at Boise State. I mean, they're the fifth highest ranked projected conference championship. So a little reminder for the rules this year for the playoff: the top five conference champions get auto bids, and then the top four conference champions get a bye. But I'll tell you what, man, Ash and Jeanty in the playoff, that would be a must watch for anybody. I mean, I would love to see Boise State as the rep. I would also want to see Army, but if it's one or the other, I probably want to see Boise State in there.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with Boise State being in there. I actually, if you're SMU and let's say you maybe like looking at the future, and I'm going to try to stay on the whole this is the first college football playoff bracket, and that's what we should be talking about. But it's hard not to look ahead. If, let's say, an Alabama loses to an LSU or something like that happens, where maybe Boise moves up into 11, and then you end up getting what would that be? The chance for SMU. The interesting discussion would be is if SMU won the ACC championship, they figure that out. At 3 or 4, you could draw Boise, and I would love for SMU that matchup.
Yeah,
run defense that SMU has. I'm not sitting here saying that they would be able to shut down Jonte, but he has slowed down a little bit just over the course of getting into conference play and things like that. But when you look at this top 25, one of our national reporters, Ari Wasserman, who recently came over to On Three, and you can debate this piece of his argument when it comes to Indiana, and they really haven't played anyone. They, you know, looking almost Liberty-esque with their schedule, but Penn State at number 6 is atrocious. Yeah. Like Tennessee, Indiana, BYU, and then, I mean, if you're asking me my honest opinion, I think an Alabama, you know, an A&M, an LSU are probably better than a Notre Dame or Penn State. Like they would beat them neutral site. So, but however you figure out how to rank those, I just don't know. But like Penn State, Notre Dame for me, like they should be 11-12 at what, you know, like at worst. And I don't know necessarily the reasoning around Boise being at number 12 over SMU outside the fact that, hey, they're going to be in if they win out, and they're being projected that way. So are they just going to sit there at 12 and 12 doesn't matter? Or are they going to reseed and in a couple weeks, like, you know, Boise could be up to 10 or something? It's just, that's the interesting line to walk. Like, is Boise always going to be 12? And how do you rank teams around that? Because Alabama or LSU is going to be walking out of Tiger Stadium this weekend with a loss. One of them is.
And it's an elimination game.
Yeah, it's an elimination game. A&M still has some games left to be played. They still got to play Texas. You know, Notre Dame, I haven't looked ahead on their schedule, but it's just so interesting to see how they initially slot these, because the 6th best team in the country is not Penn State.
I agree fully with all that. I mean, I think Alabama is at 11. I mean, Jalen Milroe has not looked good in big moments so far this year. I mean, we'll see how the LSU game goes this weekend. Maybe it proves me wrong, puts up some giant numbers. But Notre Dame is, in my opinion, I think they're more overrated than Penn State, to be honest with you. I mean, you lose to Northern Illinois at home. I don't care that it's early in the season. I mean, you beat Texas A&M in College Station, but they just lost to South Carolina. I mean, That game looks worse now after this past weekend. But
and you have a veteran quarterback there. Like 100%. Riley Leonard's played a bunch of ball. And, I mean, if you're at – there, we would really have to dive down into when you're breaking down, like, how SMU would fare against an Alabama and A&M and LSU. Like, I think – and this isn't pandering because I have a connection to LSU, but I think when you look at what LSU's quarterback can do against secondaries, throwing the football – like maybe SMU could make them one-dimensional and have to throw the football. Like, I don't know if LSU would be able to run on SMU's defense with the depth they have. But what I do think SMU could do is contain Jalen Milroe, because he's such an average passer. Yeah. Like, he almost doesn't threaten in a way. But Ryan Williams, on the other hand, would have an absolute field day in all likelihood against SMU's corners. So that would be a much longer discussion as far as breaking down those games if SMU does ever get there. And then A&M, you know, who's the quarterback? What's the real A&M team? So it's all fascinating. And just for us covering it, I hope we get the chance to break down some of those types of games. And we'll maybe just have to do a podcast every single day that those weeks if that happens. But I just have a lot of issue with Penn State, Notre Dame, and even to an extent Tennessee. Like the way Tennessee's offense looks right now, I think SMU could beat them.
Yeah. So, on the flip side,
yeah,
I think BYU is a little bit disrespected that night. I mean, they beat the crap out of everybody. I mean,
yeah,
Kansas State, they put up, beat them by 30. I mean, yeah. And Kansas State is the 19th team on here.
Yeah. So, I can't believe Pitt is as high as it is. Like, give me Louisville. Give me Louisville.
Yeah, I can't believe that either. But Indiana, 59th strength of schedule. But, yes, they have dominated pretty much everybody they've played this year. I mean, they were trailing for the first time this season, this past weekend. So, can't really deny all that, what they've done so far. Kurt Cignetti has done an incredible job with that program. Tennessee, yeah, they had the big win against Alabama, but like we've established, Jalen Milroe has looked terrible in those big games. Also lost against Arkansas. That's their big one. You know, that's their only blemish on their record, but that's not a good one to have. And then Penn State, what I look at is James Franklin can't win the big game. I mean, say what you will. I understand Penn State is always a top 10 program when he's at the helm, but if you can't beat Ohio State at home in 10 tries, he's beaten them once. I mean, at some point, Penn State is going to have to make a move, or else you're accepting mediocrity from them, because now you're not going to play in the Big Ten championship because you have a loss. Unless Oregon somehow slips up and there's a three-way tie, which I don't even think they play Oregon. I think Penn State doesn't get them. But either way, I mean, they're on the outside looking in my opinion. But Texas Longhorns, number five, you know, they got destroyed by Georgia in Austin, but they were the number one team in the country for a few weeks this year. But I think every SMU and A&M fan is foaming at the mouth at the chance to go beat the Texas Longhorns, you know, whether that's in the last regular season game for A&M or whether that's in the first round of the playoffs for SMU. And then Miami, I heard it this evening on the ESPN broadcast. They have snatched victory from the jaws of defeat. I mean, at least four times this year. You've got Virginia Tech, Cal, Louisville, and Duke were all fourth quarter wins. And a little bit that speaks to the culture of what Miami's got, but you got to think at some point they're going to get beat. You know, you can't mess around forever and just get lucky and be able to pull it out. I do think that SMU and Miami are on a collision course this year with the history, you know, with Coach Lashley and the Miami Mustangs. All of those guys, all of the transfers who came from Miami, they were pissed that Miami wasn't on the schedule this year when it came out. And so I really, really hope that we get that chance to go play them for a conference championship, because if you think these guys are flying around now, just wait.
Yeah.
George, go ahead.
Yeah. And here's the thing too. There are multiple teams, and this is the beauty of the 12 team playoff. Like, I think Texas is kind of fragile. I mean, you can make the case that every SEC team minus Georgia in the college football playoff ranking is fragile. Like, they all have like tons of holes, I would say, just versus traditional clear cut number one Georgia or clear cut number one Alabama. And LSU in 19 and things like that. But there really could be so much shuffling of this top 15, like 15. I mean, Ole Miss could somehow sneak in and be 11. But I'm pretty positive, in my opinion, these are the best 15 teams in the country. Like, I don't look at 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. I mean, I really like Louisville, so maybe they would be up around there, but they're so inconsistent and they just haven't proven it. But other than that, I mean, I think the top 15 is really solid. Like, whoever is left out at 13, 14, 15 will have a legitimate gripe. And at the same time, there's however many more weeks to go, and a lot of this will in fact be settled on the field. And when you look at Texas and you look at Miami, I think those are two that, one, you look at how bad Texas got beat by Georgia. It doesn't make them a bad team, but they also, I think, just have some, like, they almost don't pass the eye test for me. Like, they've got Quinn, but you bench him at one point against Georgia. he's been hurt. He didn't necessarily look great early against Oklahoma. I mean, there's so much. Maybe I'm just a little bit of overexposure watching them at times this year, but they don't look like the college football playoff team that went last year and was able to, you know, make that run that they did, granted against in the Big 12. So, and then Miami, like you said, playing fire every week. I mean, like looking up at Miami's schedule the rest of the way, they do play Georgia Tech this coming weekend. Georgia Tech is pesky. Then they have Wake Forest. They should roll. That comes after a bye week. And they play Syracuse. And that Georgia Tech game is on the road this weekend. And then they finish up at Syracuse with, you know, a potential nightmare zone scenario, just like SMU. I mean, SMU has three games that you're sitting there and you're kind of like, all right, they could, you know, in theory, lose any of those games. But Miami, just with the way Syracuse can throw the football, with the way Georgia Tech can be tough, if they were to have Haynes King, it's just, it can all come crashing down at any moment.
That's the beauty of college football. I mean, I'm with you. I think Miami is going to finish at 12-0, and they're going to be the home team for the ACC championship. But I look at the SMU schedule going forward, and I'm with you too. I mean, all of these games concern me for different reasons. You know, Boston College obviously beat us last year in the bowl game. We haven't played particularly well on the road. If you take away the Louisville game, obviously that was a huge win for us. But playing Virginia in Virginia, Billy, you and I will be at that game. That one concerns me. And then finally, just it's always a tough situation. End of the year, Thanksgiving, you know, you finish with Cal, who their record doesn't show it. They've given a lot of ACC teams trouble. So we'll see how the year finishes. But just to round off my thoughts for the playoff, I mean, I think Georgia's the best team in the country. I think they really should be number one. They should definitely be over Ohio State. But, and then at number one, you've got Oregon, which I love the job that Dan Lanning is doing coaching this team, but I would feel better playing Oregon than I would playing Georgia.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like I just, as good as the offensive line has been able to bounce back here and there over the course of the season for SMU, they would have a lot of issues with Georgia's front.
Dude's a freakazoids.
And they would probably have issues with Ohio State's. I mean, they would have some issues with Oregon's too, but I think those are the two that in the top 10, at least, really like jump out at me right away. And that's without having watched too much Oregon.
Yeah.
But they're a very good team. They always play really hard and things like that. I love what Dan Lanning does as far as his program, but yeah, exactly. It would be quite the interesting day for SMU just overall playing Georgia. I mean, that is just a physical team. I will say this, with how Carson Beck has looked this year, I'd be interested to see what the score of that game looks like.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be anywhere from like 10-7 to like just, I don't know. I don't know what it could very well be a blowout. Like that would, I would not feel confident, you know, that game happened for SMU, but just because of SMU's defense and how much respect I have for them, I think they could play Georgia's offense tough, similar to how I would have felt about SMU playing Oregon in the Fiesta Bowl last year, if they would have gotten that opportunity. It would have looked, you know, I don't know if SMU's offense would have been able to do it, but the defense would have been able to contain Bo Nix a little bit there. But anyway, that's
fortunately, if we win the ACC, we wouldn't play Ohio State or Georgia until the national championship.
That is true, and that is where, gosh, this bracket, trying to remember all the different pieces, and actually one of our On3 analysts mentioned that if you're having struggles, just remember that ESPN basically helped create this thing. And the first weekend, they got everybody confused talking about it and about how, oh, this team could that play. But they wouldn't if they're in the top four until the national championship. So good reminder there, Hayden. I'm sure I needed it. Or at least the semifinals, because you could, in theory, get 1-4, 2-3, and things like that. So, yeah, it's going to be wild. But We're going to have a blast talking about it. This is a now Tuesday night tradition for SMU fans to be waiting around and watching the college football playoff release, which is just wild to think about overall. So we're going to have a blast covering it, and we are going to get back to it next week. We will do coast to coast. We will do breakdown of the Boston College game and preview that, as well as take mailbag questions. But what a win for SMU to beat Pitt, now 13th in the college football playoff rankings. And all they need to do is just keep winning and keep being themselves.
No doubt. I mean, this team can definitely do it. The schedule is favorable from here on out. I mean, we're favored in all three of the remaining games. And fortunately, I think this team is mature enough to be able to do it, because in November, SMU teams of old have collapsed, while Rhett Lashley teams seem to perform really well in November. So we'll certainly see how it plays out. I can't wait to watch it. Just quick note before we go, I am grateful that AJ Davis was able to walk away from the very scary situation in Ford Stadium on Saturday night. And just when things like that happens, it is really hard to get back to the game, because it seems like it almost doesn't matter at that point. Cause you're just so worried about your teammate, but all the scans came back and were negative. So praise God that he was able to be all right.
Yeah. And he did come back to the sidelines at the end of the game and was in, you know, the facility, just, you know, he's okay. And it's very scary, but one thing I'll add as well is that SMU quickly got the right people onto the field and quickly made decisions for his best interest, to, and out of abundance of caution and all those things, to get the ambulance out there, pull it right on the field, get him out of there, and get him examined at a local hospital really quickly. So very, very lucky that on a great night like that, that it wasn't something worse, and we're not talking about something very different. So very lucky. So thinking about AJ and all the, you know, recovery pieces that he'll go through now and all that. And we will hope to see him back on the field soon. So I'm not sure what process that, you know, goes to next, but we'll be monitoring him and all of those things. So with that, SMU number 13th in the country in the college football playoff, crazy to think about. But it's where SMU is. So for Hayden Howerton, I'm Billy Umbody. We'll leave it at that with another edition of the On the Pony Express podcast. And we'll be back next week to break down SMUBC, November 16th, 2:30 p.m. Central on ESPN in Ford Stadium, another home game for the Mustangs as they look to move up in the college football playoff rankings. We'll see you guys next time.
Thanks for listening to the On the Pony Express podcast with Billy Embody.
Follow us on your socials on X at SMU on 3 and on Instagram at On3SMU.
And keep it locked to OnThePonyExpress.com for more coverage.